Welcome to the Auto Firepower Hour. I'm just going to jump straight into it. Back again to round off his trilogy of, of bitching and moaning about gigantic PC game developers slash publishers. And which is very fitting because the, you know, the Star Wars is wrapping up its trilogy. Trilogies are all, this new craze. No, never before have trilogies been as popular as they are today. So once again, Uncle Bob Bear back into the co-pilot's chair. And who are we talking about today?
The perfect company to wrap up the trilogy series with. It's Valve.
Yes, it's the ultimate in terms of PC companies that you can certainly find some gripes with these days.
And also, I don't think I'm alone. Growing up in the 90s, as a guy who loved Blizzard, BioWare, and Valve.
Right.
That was like the holy trinity.
It really is.
Video game developers for a long, long, long time.
I'm an id man personally, but I understand where you're coming from. And
well,
that
those guys are legends too, who have also fallen. And we handled that in a different way when we talked about John Romero and the Falling Starts.
Yeah, you're not you're not a big fan of his hair, and I vehemently disagree with your thoughts on the man, but you're certainly entitled to your opinions.
His hair is offensive. His Kickstarter is the most offensive Kickstarter I've ever seen in my life, ever. So
again, as a fan of Griff's, it's one of my favorite. The one thing he did do that I think is fucking super neat, and I don't know if you know about this, but so Limited Run Games released his Doom mod that he did, like physically released his Doom mod on like a really cool, like demon looking USB stick. But the whole pack, it's a physical package, and you need obviously, like, you know, Doom or something to because they're just WAD files is all they are,
right?
But they're just packaged and sold. But the whole thing is like just death metal as fuck, like pentagrams on it. It's what you would want, at least what I would want from John Romero. Maybe you're checked out on the whole thing, and by maybe I mean 100% certainly you are, but I still appreciate it.
I don't, no, when I think of John Romero, I think of not pleasant things,
Well, I think of the sport of kings, professional wrestling. And how he fits right into that world.
Oh, man.
But different strokes.
Yeah.
Valve, we should go on some touchstones, personal touchstones. You have much more than I do, so mine can be first and brief. Half-Life was a big game for me in that it was something that I went out of my way to play when I didn't have a PC that could play it. My neighbor luckily did, and he was a big PC guy. So this was one of those things where I would... you know, come home from school. I was a teenager at the time. I would come home from school, kind of, you know, throw my shit down and then just walk next door and play Half-Life all day until I beat it. It is probably, I've only recently gotten back into PC games, and I use that. That's very loose. Like, I own a PC and buy games on it, but it's not safe to say or fair to say that I'm a PC gamer by any stretch. But back then in 98, Half-Life being that was like the big apex for me in terms of playing PC games and then having this like amazing fucking experience with Half-Life. And one would think that being so affected by Half-Life that I would kind of you know, shift gears and go into PC stuff, but nope.
And Dreamcast, you'd be a Valve guy.
I'd be a Valve guy, but no, Dreamcast all day, baby. that was the following year, and no turning back.
There's a fork in the road, Brian, this is the thing from Pulp Fiction, like Beatles people can like Elvis and Elvis people can like the Beatles, but you can't ever like them equally.
Right.
You're either one or the
one
other.
So
you're a Dreamcast console guy. I'm a PC gamer. So
yeah, that's fair. And we can share and break bread in between somewhere.
Right.
Certainly as well. But yeah, so Half-Life for me, I've played Half-Life, Half-Life 2, Portal, all their major stuff.
Oh, we'll get to Portal 2 maybe for the first time in one of these, we could talk about a shared experience that we have in a game, because we had a lot of fun with Portal.
Portal 2 is actually, that's one of the few games that you and I have that sat down and we played beginning to end together.
And it was exactly what I wanted it to be.
It was a complete hoot. It was
a wonderland.
Yeah, it was
a wonderland of fun.
You're exactly right. We created John Mayer music together. all their major games, I'm very well versed in. Where I check out my gaps, and this is to no surprise to you, are all of their competitive stuff. I never gave Counter-Strike or any of that stuff any time of day.
Team Fortress.
Yeah. Team Fortress. None of that stuff because I am bad at video games. And for those games, you have to be exceptionally good at them in order to have a good time, or you're going to never have a good time with it.
Right.
Which was where I firmly have landed. And I accept that. And so that's what that is. But now I know for you being the PC lifer, you're really the PC voice of the Power Hour. Even though Ray dabbles, but you definitely do more than dabble.
That's my home.
Yeah, that's your home. Yeah.
He merely visits the dark. I was born into it.
Yeah, he goes to Total War conventions, and that's about it.
Yeah, fair enough. So, my first experience with Valve is, we talked once, on a podcast, and I love that I've had these moments in my life, and I fear for my children not having them.
Mm-hmm.
About the first time I ever saw a fatality in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And like the crowd parts, and like I'd come up to the screen and Sub-Zero's ripping somebody's head off. Yeah, just like how visceral of a moment that was. I can specifically remember it. And I was 13 at the time, so it was like the perfect age.
Yeah.
So similarly with Half-Life was a game that could be 3D accelerated, mm-hmm. if you had a capable graphics card.
A Voodoo.
Your Voodoos, yeah. Or your... this is actually pre-GeForce.
Yeah, it was.
Not around yet. So, but I think Radeon might have been. The Viper. That's what it was.
The Viper was the one.
I worked at McDonald's, and I used a full paycheck to buy my brother a $250 Viper V770 Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so meaningful to me that 25 years later, I remember the model number of the card and the price.
You goddamn right.
And where I bought it, the Best Buy that I would
later
work at.
That's McNugget money right there.
Full paid 2 weeks worth of work for that.
Right.
Gave it to my brother because I didn't have a PC, just so I could see what good video games would look like on his computer. But you and I had a friend who had Half-Life.
Yeah.
And I remember going to that person's house and seeing the game in OpenGL, actual rendered 3D accelerated OpenGL, and Half-Life begins with the famous tram ride where you get into a tram and you're being introduced to the
whole
world.
Dude, the whole beginning part of Half-Life is so awesome.
And it's so different.
It's exactly. And like it's tough to go back and play it now and like be like, well, I don't know what the big deal is here. The big deal about that is like we'd been playing fucking Doom and Quake, you know, yes. Levels.
What does Doom do? It's like, here's your gun. Actually, they don't even give you the gun. You start with a gun. Yeah. Go shoot some aliens. And this was different.
And it's beginning to end. Like level one completed. Level two completed. And then, you know, here's basically like a first person movie, like a sci-fi action movie that you play.
Exactly right. And they did things in game. It's the showing, not telling.
Yeah.
So it's like you're a doctor going to work, and rather than just having a text screen pop up and give you a narrative, there's like an intercom that comes on and is making morning announcements that you might hear every morning. But
do the fucking colored stripe deal on the walls.
That's so funny that you mentioned that. That was the other example I was going to point out. So once you get to the facility, there are these colored stripes on the walls, and each one tells you where you're supposed to go.
Yeah.
So there's no like Dr. Wright or whatever that pops up and it's like, hey, go do this.
Yeah, you actually have to like make the legwork to further along the narrative. And when so that that paint strip on the wall thing that they have in Half-Life, like I for you know up until like I don't know handful of years ago, just thought that was like a Half-Life thing. But that, you know, that's the thing that big buildings actually do use. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's funny when you go to Europe and you see how like visually people have to communicate because there's all these different languages.
Yeah.
And so instead of saying exit, there's like a little dude running away or whatever. It's like really, really helpful. You see how the rest of the world has to.
Yeah.
Has it's to, like this is convey
how,
instructions.
This is how it goes.
Right. So when you're on that tram, I remember taking the mouse and like doing a little 360 thing that you would just do in a game now because all games are 3D.
Right.
And being like, oh my God.
I'm there.
You're in a tram that's in a giant cave heading into a place.
Yep.
And sound effects like the tram stops, the doors slowly open so for you to go into the next area. Just incredible. Like nobody else was doing that.
And the game that I'll keep comparing Half-Life to is Quake. Because Quake is also like this big tentpole thing where it's like, well, you know, we made Doom, but now here's polygonal Doom. But there's something that's so like immediately apparent. And I'm not even talking about like the quality of the character models in Half-Life, because that's obvious. Like, yeah, wow, these are like approaching like realistic looking 3D representations of people.
Yeah, no doubt.
But when you move around the camera in Half-Life, like there's like a certain fluidity that just immediately, especially back then, just immediately like kind of confounds you and tricks you into thinking like, wow, this is as close to reality as we'll ever get in a video game. Because then you look at it with Quake, and it's, even if you had like, you know, the top of the line PC at the time, like there's just something about the way the game moves and looks that is just inherently video game. Like there's an abstractness there.
Well, and it's a lot more, it's a lot more pixely than the render. That's the difference that I know. So if you could find somebody who had a graphics card, you could render it and play Half-Life in OpenGL.
Yeah, with all the nice texture work. Yeah, and stuff like that.
Compared to Quake, which actually had OpenGL capabilities, but it just...
But later on, though, the OpenGL stuff came later on.
Yeah, originally it was just pixel stuff.
Yeah.
And it looks okay, but it doesn't look like Half-Life really...
To me, Quake looked... When I first saw Quake, just straight up vanilla Quake, I was amazed by it because, you know, it's like, wow, this is like virtual racing, but Doom.
Yeah.
And they're texture mapped. So it was like impressive, but it was... Like, again, it was so like video gamey, and Half-Life just wasn't. It
felt real.
Yeah, totally.
It felt very real. And it was a huge step forward, both graphically, and that's what we've been talking about, but also narratively.
Yeah.
And the way that the narrative progressed. It was great how that happened. Mm-hmm. And you meet, you know, this cop, Barney, and he kind of helps you along, and you're just a dude going to work, and then something goes wrong. And it felt very cinematic-like.
Yeah.
And so for a company's first game,
yeah, no shit.
you could do a lot worse. So Half-Life comes out. Half-Life is a really big deal.
Well, we should talk about Gabe Newell before we keep going down the road.
Yeah.
The
Half-Life road. Yeah. So Gabe Newell, he of a net worth right now, $3.5 billion, mm-hmm. 239th richest person in America, according to Forbes.
Still uses Del Taco coupons, though. I can promise you that.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, who doesn't?
Exactly.
He was a Harvard dropout like so many billionaires are.
Which we were just talking off air about why that's a thing. It's you know what? I can't be bothered with your Ivy League education. It gets in the way of me making my billions.
I have real stuff to do.
So. Yeah.
And he actually he dropped out of Harvard to go work for Microsoft in 1980. Pretty good time to work for Microsoft.
Yeah, no shit.
And said that he learned more there in 3 months than he had learned at Harvard the 3 years he was there or whatever. He works at Microsoft for 13 years. So you might imagine what your stock options starting at Microsoft in 1980 Microsoft in 1993 would have been. And then while he was there, he worked on the early precursor to what would become DirectX.
Yeah.
DirectX technology.
Well, and Windows 1.0.
And Windows 1.0.
Yeah.
And so by the time that he left, he became convinced after playing Doom, of all things, and Mario 64,
mm-hmm.
that video games could be the next major entertainment medium.
Right.
Which he was, of course, right about. So he founds his company, Valve, and they start working on a game, Half-Life. And then Half-Life comes out, and it's just...
It's that. Yeah, it's exactly that.
And I believe to this day, if you go on the Metacritic rankings for all-time games, any console, any genre, any year, Half-Life is in the top five the last time I looked.
Oh, in terms of the critical reception?
Highest critical rating.
Yeah.
It's like in the 96s.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
So, all right, so Half-Life comes out, and then Half-Life also spawns a modding community.
Yeah.
And I can remember the LAN party days of 1999, and my brother telling me, he was like, hey, there's this game we're all playing. It's called Counter-Strike, but you have to install Half-Life to play it. And I was so confused by that.
Yeah. So your brother is also the same person who tried to explain this to me too, as he was getting into it. And it was tough for me to wrap my head around as well.
Yeah. Why do I have to install?
Yeah. I want to play this game.
Yeah. Single player FPS Half-Life to play Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
And he was like, and what is Counter-Strike? And he was like, shut up. Don't worry about all that. Just
do this. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I remember like he did it, and then we started, like we went to an arena against each other.
Yeah.
I think my cousin was over there, and I was playing against my cousin. My brother was just trying to verify that we're actually in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
And I turn around, and my cousin is right in front of me, and he's like, hi. I got so scared, I acted in the game as I would in real life. I immediately start shooting the ceiling. I was like, ah!
That's something I never want to be in a situation where you're armed with like an Uzi and like something jumps out of the dark.
Startled while holding an Uzi. Ooh. Yeah, there's gonna be a bloodbath.
Yeah. You're the last person I want to be shoulder to shoulder with.
I will
scenario.
Kill everyone in that room.
Oh yeah,
friend or enemy, and probably maim myself at the same time. All right, so Counter-Strike spawns from Half-Life. Valve had the incredible good sense of hiring the two people who created Counter-Strike. to work for Valve.
Isn't this something that Valve like has done again and again? Like they yeah. notice how good certain members of their modding community is, and then they just say, you're on board.
We'll get to Dota, and that's exactly what they did with Dota.
Right.
It was a modding member of a different community, but they hired the guy. And it contrasts perfectly with the criticism that I had of Blizzard when we did that podcast, mm-hmm. how when they had modders making really popular games on their titles, they're like, great, free money.
Right. Yeah.
And
that was it.
And then those modders apparently, obviously, they're like, hey, this is really popular. Maybe I could just make some money on my own doing this.
Right.
And one gets bought by Valve and the other one founds League of Legends. And now those are the two biggest
games. Yeah, no shit.
Blizzard had both of those guys basically doing work for them for free and didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Bad look, fellas.
A little bit. A little bit.
So, all right. So Half-Life sets the world on fire, creates Counter-Strike.
Yep.
So 20 years later, that's still a thing.
Well, Counter-Strike was running pretty much at the same time as like Quake 3 was super popular online too, right?
Exact same year, 99. Yeah. Quake 3 came out in 99.
See, that to me is when I...
Oh, and Unreal Tournament, by the way.
And Unreal, okay.
Unreal Tournament 2000.
Yes. So those three games is when I took notice of like just how much of a runaway thing PC multiplayer games had become.
Yeah, it was... well, and we're doing LAN parties. Like everybody, yes. This is pre the ability to do that easily via the internet.
Yeah.
So you had to physically
meet up and do
yeah,
all
that. Yeah, and everybody would bring their computers and their CRT monitors yeah, and like so make cool. an event out of it. I have three monitors, and you better believe at LAN parties I would bring all three monitors.
That's so cool.
Giant 40-pound monitors yeah. lugging in my
you gotta car. See. You gotta see.
Right. So, and then Team Fortress 2 was a huge yeah. multi... Or Team Fortress 1.
The original one, yeah.
Was a huge thing that was a mod of the original Half-Life.
What was the one, the Quake mod that was super popular that was like Capture the Flag, but had a different name?
Oh, man. Maybe it's called the acronym CTF.
Yeah, you're right. So I remember my neighbor, the same guy who I played Half-Life on his PC, like when that game came out, like, you know, we're talking like drop out of high school stuff, like just fucking just forget about it. But I think that's where like a lot of the Valve story is timing.
Yeah.
Like they were at the right place at the right time with the right ideas. It's like time and time again.
No doubt.
Up until.
Yeah.
Foreshadow.
Yeah. In a very fundamental way. In a very, you could say, disruptive way.
Oh,
They did that twice with Half-Life, and then we'll get to Steam. But two times they've actively disrupted the entire industry
right.
with their products. So Half-Life spawns two expansions to it, one of which you play as the Barney Cop Blue Shift, and then another one called Opposing Force.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a while, everybody was like, great, what are you guys doing next?
Yeah, exactly.
And that went from 1998 to basically 2004, mm-hmm. where in between, that's 6 years, they did release the expansions in the intervening years, and then I think they released the game out on console once, and then the Counter-Strike, they put money into that. But they did not release a retail product from 1998 to 2004, which was unheard of at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that Half-Life was their only damn product.
Right.
In 2003, mm-hmm. they released a little thing called Steam. And I guess I could say this now. So I worked for Vivendi Universal Games at the time, and Vivendi Universal Games owned Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
Sierra was a mid-major publisher, and they were the publisher of all of Valve's games.
Yeah, they sure were.
So I had actually very, very, very early access to Steam. And I remember looking out and saying, well, that's stupid.
No one will want this.
So clearly I should not be a venture capitalist. That's the first thing.
And it took the plucky young upstarts of Phantom Console
yeah.
to really understand that the idea was there and it was worth mining for.
And right. And by the way, the only thing preventing me from being a venture capitalist is that I've had bad ideas on what to invest in. I have plenty of money. Plenty all the money in the world,
right.
Nothing to invest.
Nothing
in.
To invest.
That's the
in
only
it.
Roadblock. So all right. So anyway, so Steam hits in 03, but it's nobody's really paying that much attention to it. And you could only use Steam for Valve games.
Right.
So it's like, well, you could, this will save you a trip to the store to buy our games. And like, whatever. But then Half-Life 2 comes out in late 2004. And I remember
you had to have Steam for Half-Life 2, right?
And you had to have Steam for, and that's when I made my account.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the developer I worked for at the time got Half-Life 2 for free. Everybody at the studio got it. Cause we had the same own the Vivendi owned us and Valve or Sierra.
Right.
And so we got Half-Life 2, and I remember Half-Life 2 came out the exact same month that World of Warcraft came out.
That's right.
Pretty good month for gaming.
Yeah.
Pretty good month to have those two products hit the market at the in the same freaking month.
Yeah, no shit.
I didn't have a wife, didn't have kids. I was living on my own in Sweden.
You had
I
some
did
time.
Not, I did not sleep.
Yeah. you were active.
Yeah. But I was actually active only playing World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
True story, I did not play Half-Life 2, even though I got it for free and made a Steam account. I think I played through the prologue and didn't otherwise play the game at the time.
I played through Half-Life 2. I tried to play through it in 05. I had like a shitty like Frankenstein together PC, and I had bought like a somewhat of a decent video card, and like Half-Life 2 would run on it, but like not that great. So for me, I didn't complete Half-Life 2 in the following episodes until Orange Box comes out. Then I played it on the PS3, which is funny because the PS3 version of Orange Box, if anyone played it when it came out, was not good. Like it was back when people did still, and they kind of never really did learn how to properly make games on the IBM Cell processor that is in the PS4. But any of this x86 shit that was coming out and being ported to 360, which ran wonderfully on 360 because it's just a fucking off-the-shelf PC, basically.
Yeah, right.
And it ran really bad on PS3, which is a testament because I really, really, really enjoyed playing Half-Life 2, even if it was like a bad port of it. It was still that good of an experience.
That was a weird thing because by all accounts, the PS3 had the stronger raw processor in it.
Yeah.
Everybody, and Gabe Newell is on record saying he hated development for PS3 because it just wasn't really conducive to what people were used to, whereas Microsoft had just put out a PC as a console.
Yeah.
So everybody was really...
He just knew what to do. I think the Xbox 362 like natively had DirectX support too. So like...
Right.
You could just, you know, basically flip a switch.
And Valve's like, oh, we can develop for this.
Yeah.
The guy who owned our company made it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So Half-Life 2 comes out in 2004 and it's just great, man.
Yeah.
It's a great game, a great narrative.
The thing that always jumps out to me when I think about Half-Life 2 is the neighborhood that you have to go through.
The zombie neighborhood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is what's funny because Half-Life 2 isn't a horror game.
Right.
But that section of the game is very clearly a horror game.
Yes.
And it's like one of the most effective horror games.
Definitely.
The only time I can think of being like that legitimately scared at a fucking horror game and not like kind of like fun haha clock tower kind of scared was the Resident Evil remake when it came out for GameCube. Like all the Lucy stuff, it still holds up. It's like legitimately scary stuff, but Half-Life 2 totally trumped that in that little section of the game.
Alien Isolation, remember that?
Oh yeah, that's another one too. That's a legitimately terrifying game.
I bring that up because you were the one who turned me on.
I did. Yeah, I recommended that to you.
Yeah, so and that was another echo of a prior podcast. Tried to play that with my daughter.
Yeah. Parenting 101, man.
she literally cried it a couple times.
That's fucking terrifying.
What was I thinking?
I don't know. Look, she's your first one. So
he doesn't make all the mistakes.
Yeah, you make all the mistakes with that one. Yeah. And hopefully it pans out for you when she's an adult.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so that game is spectacular. And you're right, in that particular area of the game, you don't get much ammo. So you got to use like environmental objects to kill zombies, and there's like saws that you can turn on.
And you're constantly being overwhelmed by them. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that combined with the physics engine,
mm-hmm.
it really...
That's the real star of the show is the physics engine.
Yeah, of course.
That's like where physics in games comes from is Half-Life 2.
Yeah. It's about half to two-thirds of the way through you get the gravity gun.
Yeah.
And then once you get it, it's just like, I'm picking up cars and shooting them at zombies. It's so much fun.
It feels so good.
Yeah, so good. So... But also the narrative was great.
Yeah.
Right. And then the environmental effects.
Half-Life 2 does a better job of Half-Life 1 of giving you this real like hand on your back, pushing you forward narrative experience where you are going exactly where they want you to go.
Yeah.
But it never feels like that.
Totally.
It always feels like you're just like in this fucking world and things are happening. They're like, whoa, this is kind of happen chancy, randomy. None of it is. But that's the Valve calling card.
And the pacing of the game is basically perfect.
Yeah.
There's intense moments and then you get a little respite and you get to talk to characters and get a little narrative. And then you go to a totally different area. Now you're in a city. Now you're in a country.
Right.
So they ended up at the time, what Valve thought that they were going to do was release periodic, frequent, episodic content for Half-Life 2. And instead of having a traditional expansion that you would develop over 2 years, they would release these short little episodes every few months. And boy, does that look like pie in the sky thinking.
Fuck yeah.
Looking back. because they did the first episode that they thought might come out right after Half-Life was released, took a year to develop. The second one, which was supposed to be a few months after that, took another year to develop and came out in 2007. The game itself came out in 2004.
Yeah, I think episode two came out, and then a few months later, the Orange Box came out.
Yeah. So the Orange Box I have here is basically being peak Valve. We talked about peak BioWare.
Oh, it's 100% peak Valve.
Because now you've got the Orange Box comes out. So it's episode two, which was great.
Yeah.
And it also includes Team Fortress 2.
Yep.
And which everybody had been clamoring for a long time. And it also includes this little throw-in game called Portal.
Which is so funny because like that was like, it was immediate that like, oh, you know, this is our fun, like little cute thing as like a whatever additional value thing. But yeah. Then across the board, everyone was like, oh, that's the game.
Yeah.
Like the one that was like an afterthought was the one that everyone came away with being like, that is the best thing on fucking Orange Box. And that's containing Half-Life 2.
Well, and I had mentioned that Half-Life 1 is in the top 5 best reviewed games ever.
Yeah.
The Orange Box is, I think, in the top 10. I mean, it's up there.
You got to say, I don't see how you don't say that Orange Box is like the all-time greatest value proposition in video game history.
Yeah, it wasn't even a full, it was like $30 or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That. It wasn't even a full game.
And you're getting just all this, you're just
Portal
getting
alone
fucking
justified that.
Michael Jordan after Michael Jordan in there.
A Team Fortress, yeah, Team Fortress 2 is still a thing.
Yeah,
day.
Still going.
Yeah, so... Orange Box, yeah, it could not have done better. In those two episodes of content, could not have done better.
Yeah,
and that was the last time you would hear about Half-Life
for a long time,
from 2007 until 2019, November 2019.
That's right.
Which we'll get to, but there are YouTube videos strewn all over the internet of kids who aren't even alive in 2007, mm-hmm. and they're going back and playing Half-Life 2 now. And like these horrible dads who are way worse than I am, yeah. by playing. I merely played Alien Isolation with my kid.
Yeah,
these dads are filming their kids playing the end of episode 2, mm-hmm. seeing the cliffhanger ending, yeah. and then telling their kids like, "And by the way, there's nothing else after this."
Yeah,
even
you'll never
this,
know.
This came out the year you were born, and you're 12 now, and there's still no new content since then. And the kids are like, "But why?"
Hey, look, kid. To that kid, I would say, hey, Shenmue 3 is very real. So keep hope alive.
I would say, Gabe Newell, you've done a bad thing. And then if I can go dark for a minute, millions of people played these games.
Yeah.
There are some people out there, more than one, who played episode 2, loved it, have waited around to see what would happen, and have fucking died.
That's true.
From 2007 to now.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot of years.
And they died not knowing.
Yeah.
Damn you, Gabe Newell. No, damn shit. You straight to hell for that.
Well, and maybe, you know, I kind of want to jump off and birdwalk here a little bit, because obviously we're leading up to talk about like why they were not making games. And that's obviously because of fucking Steam.
Yeah.
That's clear. But, and maybe we can do this now and then lead into the Steam talk. Yeah. But
okay.
Where do you think the Switch gets flipped? Or maybe how? Like, why does... Gabe Newell et al. Go from being like this like bleeding edge, creatively bleeding edge developer into like the iron hearted fucking mega publisher that they are today. Because imagine Nintendo, right? Nintendo always lauded for like how creative and fun their games are. Imagine if Nintendo just said, nope, we only make hardware now. Like, we're not going to even make games anymore. Now, obviously... Yeah. Obviously, the fucking doors would close and the lights would go off because people buy Nintendo hardware because of the Nintendo games. PC's a little different beast, but Valve was still Valve, the company behind these beloved games that we keep talking about. Why were they able to do this?
I'm going to say it happened. I'm going to pick 2010 as the year.
Okay.
And I say that because at least as of 2007, they're still releasing content and the content is spectacular.
Yes.
That's the Orange Box.
Yeah.
And then they had every intention, because they ended the Orange Box on a cliffhanger for episode 2, of an episode 3 that would conclude that game, or a Half-Life 3 that would conclude the story. The rumor I always heard is that there was an episode 3 that was started, and then it became too big, and they were going to make an entire game out of it, and they scrapped the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, but by 2010, and this is actually a perfect segue into the Steam discussion, I was on my honeymoon at mm-hmm. the time. And we're backpacking through Europe, and I visited my old roommate, shout out to you, Stefan,
mm-hmm.
in Norway. And he, when I get to his house, we were exhausted. We've been traveling. It's the middle of summer. And he goes, dude, do you know what's going on with Steam right now? He goes, there's a sale online and you can just get all these games for like 80% off, 75% off. It's insane. I haven't left my computer. There's all these flash sales. He's just like, he's like, I have like 300 games on my computer now. I don't even know how
many. The Steam sales really do become a game themselves. Like you spend more time looking through the sales and like putting shit in your shopping cart than you do playing the games.
And, right, which is exactly what I did about a week ago.
Yeah. And you do it every single year.
Yeah, dude, I spent an entire night reorganizing my wish list for like, here's the games that aren't out yet. Here's the games that are out and on sale, but organized by the Metacritic rating. And then buying 8 games and then like discarding others, like, okay, I'm not going to get these after all. And like, it became an entire night of my life, not playing video games, but on Steam,
just shopping for them,
orchestrating. Yeah. Yeah. How I'm
curating
going to
and
games.
Shopping for fucking video games.
Right. So this was the start of that.
Yeah.
And he told me about it and I was like, wow, maybe the Steam thing is, maybe it's something I should look into.
Well, the genius of Steam, the magic in the secret ingredient, as it were, is like, they just identified how to successfully combat piracy. Like they knew that if they get prices low enough to where it then becomes easier for you to just buy the game for pennies than it is to do the work that it takes, which has historically taken for pirating PC games. Like you do have to put forth an effort and like stay on top of stuff. Yeah. But with a 99 cent game is a 99 cent game all day long.
No doubt. And to own a legitimate copy of it. I mean, I pirated a lot of games in my early 20s.
Of course.
A lot. Every major release.
Yeah.
And it was really a lack of, it's like, who can pay $60, you know, to do a thing? But if you can get every Grand Theft Auto game up until that point for $20, why wouldn't you do that? Exactly. Just to own them. Or a game that you've already played and beaten, but hey, maybe I want to go back.
Well,
and
think of all those years where Steam didn't exist, or like a platform like Steam didn't exist, where like all the money that was left on the table, like kids like us who, you know, just burn fucking games all day long. Like, you know, I would have happily have paid a small amount of money for games that I liked versus having to go down like, you know, the dark alleys of fucking of like IRC channels and shit like that.
And it's a great deal for developers.
Yeah.
Because even though Steam takes a 30% cut at the time, it was like, okay, but this gives you direct access, or gives your customers direct access to your product. You don't have to.
Well, they're probably losing a bigger cut to retail anyway.
To retail and for shipping costs and all the rest of it. Yeah. So you didn't have to do that. Steve takes their cut, but you don't have to pay for the bandwidth for the download.
Yeah.
And particularly with older games, it's just free money.
Yeah, exactly.
My sister bought and gifted to me Lords of the Realm 2, which came out in 1996 from, I don't even know who the original, the original developers, I have no idea who owns the assets of it.
Yeah.
I think it actually might be my former employer now.
That's
now
awesome.
Activision. But she did that just because we had fond memories of doing that as kids playing that game.
Right.
And she was like, hey, this was $5.
Here
I couldn't
you go.
Not buy it for that. So yeah, here you go. And it was like, okay. I mean, I don't know how many times it's been done, but that's something I wouldn't consider if I went to the store and I saw Lords of the Realm 2 on the shelf for $40 or whatever it would be.
No, exactly. It would just wouldn't have been done.
Yeah.
And for me, like I am, you know, the proud cheapskate that I am. So like I force myself to play every Steam game that I buy. Certainly not to completion. I'm not a madman, but I will boot up the game and like check it out for like a minimum of like a half hour because I spent the money on it.
Yeah.
I'm in the minority there. By far, what people do is they buy these games for, you know, a pittance and never even turn them on. So it's like you're just handing a company money, and they've been doing it now for years because of these sales.
I have to have the discipline of like a recovering addict
to
not do that myself. And I have done that. And there are many games on my Steam account that I have never played.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to not give money to a game unless I'm going to
play it.
Beat it. But that's the mindset now, is I'm trying to resist the urge to actually buy these games.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is like you've been conditioned over these years to just do this.
So I'll actually, whenever I buy one, I'll install it on my computer just to do that. So it's like, okay, now it's there. So now you don't even have to like convince yourself that you still have to install it.
It's there now.
Push the button.
Yeah.
Play the game.
Just push play.
Yeah, it's tough, man. So a couple stats on Steam. They have over 33,000 total games right now. On the platform, they're releasing
32,000 of those are porn games, by the way.
Right. And then, okay. And they're releasing about 8,000 to 9,000 games, new games per year. And at one point, Steam sales accounted for 70% of all digital game sales. They have over a billion registered accounts now. And
that is fucking wild, man.
Right. And you might say, well, okay, how many of those are fake accounts or whatever? 90 million monthly active users. 90 million.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big platform. So what were they doing while they were not making games? Well, they were getting rich off Steam.
They're getting mega rich off fucking Steam.
And I picked 2010 as the year because that was when I recall at least the Steam summer sales becoming a thing. And Valve must have, I mean, if they're a privately held company.
Yeah.
But if you could see the revenue growth, I'm sure it just like goes straight. It starts going on a vertical axis, basically.
Well, and they had like around that. They got to that point, and this the year that you're talking about, or Arrow, whatever you're talking about, where they got like just straight up like fuck it money, where they could just do all kinds of weird experimentation, and like it didn't matter if it nothing. I mean, right now I'm looking at the Steam controller that I bought for $5 because no one liked it.
Right.
But like the looking at that weird ass controller, like you can just see the amount of money they spent on R&D and like. Just trying to figure out ways to just be wacky and try new shit, all because they had the freedom to do so.
They had created disruptive moments in the industry twice now. Half-Life was disruptive, and now Steam was disruptive. And they had all this money from it. So it is impossible to not get an ego after doing that.
Of course.
That you can do anything.
Yeah. So Sony with the after the PS2, they could do whatever the fuck they want. You'll buy a $600 PS3 because you're an idiot.
So Gabe Newell comes up and he's like, oh, we're going to do hardware. Here's a Steam box, Steam Link, Steam controller, the VR thing that they do. So he's like, we're going to do that. And none of that really works out. And they have this infamously flat development structure, as they call it, which at the time they had free money. So they could do weird experiments like that. And the way it works at Valve is nobody has a boss except for Gabe. It's like he's the boss. And other than executive level management, nobody is anybody's boss. And people just collaborate on things. But then it's the quintessential cooks in the kitchen thing. Without any leadership, nothing ever really gets designed.
Of course.
And so Valve from 2007 until now, you can't say that they haven't released any games, but we're going to go through it. And there's just not much there.
Yeah.
It's just not really much there.
This is a 12-year period of time.
And certainly there haven't been any Half-Life games.
Of course not. What is their official role with the Left 4 Dead series?
I think they own the development team behind Left 4 Dead.
And it's the same story. It's like they found good modders and they bought them up and gave them a bunch of money and said, make stuff for us.
Correct. And they did.
And they haven't done one of those in a very long time.
Left 4 Dead 2 was out by 2011,
2012.
Yeah. So the joke, everybody knows this joke, but in case there's one person out there who doesn't. The thing with Valve is they can't get to the number three.
Well, it's like how Street Fighter was in the 90s.
Yeah,
right? Until they fucking did it and made Street Fighter 3.
So there's Half-Life, Half-Life 2, Episode 1, Episode 2, Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead 2, Portal 2, Team Fortress, Team Fortress 2. But they just can't, they can never get the third.
That's actually, I'm not a PC guy, so that joke is new to me and it is quite fresh.
Yeah, well, there you go. So it's not that they're doing nothing during this time. So 2011... You know what? So I said 2010 was a turn earlier, but in 2011, they released Portal 2.
That's right.
Portal 2 is great.
And Portal 2 is, not only is it great, but it's like, it's Portal, the original one, but totally expanded upon it in every way you would want it to be expanded in.
And it's like, it's really hard for video games to be funny.
It's the ultimate most funny video game I've ever played, and nothing comes fucking close.
It's genuinely funny.
Yeah. I've never laughed out loud that many times. I've never intentionally laughed out loud so many times in a video game.
Gotta do a double switch podcast.
Oh yeah. Oh boy, do we. That's gonna be a four-parter.
I know, right?
And to this day, nothing touches Portal 2.
So and great graphics and a great story, and it hit all the right buttons, and it felt really good.
Oh yeah.
2011, it's on a different podcast. You talked about like 2013 being a really good year for BioWare. 2011, you had I had just built after finishing law school, like a brand new top of the line computer.
Yep.
And Skyrim came out and Portal came out, I think within a month of each other.
That's right.
And I just remember being like, dude, daddy ready.
Yeah. Fuck that law school business.
Let's do this. Yeah. You know, this is great. So Portal 2 comes out. And then the other thing that they did right around this time is that this is when they bought the Dota creator.
Right.
And they hired this guy from Blizzard, and he comes over to start working for Valve, and he had made the Defense of the Ancients mod for Warcraft 3, that became the MOBA franchise,
right,
the MOBA genre, and they paid him to start making that game for Valve, and then they decided to call it Dota 2. Yeah. They didn't have to call it that. They could have just made up some name like
But they League were Legends. Trying to do some coattailing on that.
And it worked, and Blizzard got pissed off and sued them, and then Blizzard got obliterated in court, and Valve got the name Dota 2 and the coattails.
Right.
And hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue since, in the 9 years since, because even though Dota 2, though not as big as League of Legends, huge game, by far the most popular esport in terms of net revenue.
Right.
Because Valve, smartly, if you buy their cosmetic items every year, part of what you pay for goes towards the prize pool for Dota. Mm-hmm. So everybody's incentivized, like, oh, let's make a new record for the Dota prize pool. It's like 20%.
I didn't know that. That's fucking genius marketing.
Oh, yeah. That's how they do. That's how the Dota championship always has the biggest prize pool.
It's like, these fucking MOBA, your Dotas and all these other MOBAs, like I there isn't another genre of video games that I know less about. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I cannot be bothered. Well, I know more about fucking MMOs than I do about MOBAs.
We haven't gotten to auto battlers yet, which is like a subset of MOBAs.
Right, yeah. It just gets deeper and deeper. Right. But it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, obviously I see the popularity and I know the revenue that these things generate. But I think it's just a young man's game. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, you're right.
And I'll never be able to fucking like be able to even like fake interest for these things.
It's a 100-hour commitment.
Right.
Until you're like vaguely familiar with the game. It's 100 characters. Each character
has their own like set and like skills and
you have to know how it's like 10th level chess or something. You have to know how each character interacts with members of their team.
Right.
And then reacts against members on the other team. You can't just know one guy either. When you see what the other team is picking and then you try to counter pick against them and they try to counter pick against you. It's crazy. And it's a type of thing that if it had come out when World of Warcraft came out, maybe I would have done that instead. 1,000 hours instead of that.
See, I don't think for me personally, I don't think it never would have hit me. Like, which is funny because I love fighting games. I know a lot of people from the fighting game community have gone over and gotten into the MOBAs because of like the, you know, same exact appeals of fighting games where you just have to have an overall mastery of rule sets and stuff like that. And what works and what doesn't work. So, like, I can see the appeal there as a fighting game fan, but just mechanically, I'm out. Like, it doesn't look fun to me.
The competitive part of it would be fun for me.
Yeah.
But it's so much of a wall to get over. I just can't. I'm intentionally staying away, much like as a recovering addict.
You know you'll just go off a cliff.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to get to an age where you know where your weaknesses are.
Yeah,
you
can try you're to self-aware stay enough.
Yeah. So, but anyway, but Dota becomes a really big deal. And so what Valve does, to explain a little bit more about the championship thing, is they put $1 million in and then they do work creating this pack of cosmetics and like voiceovers and just new stuff for the game. But things that don't affect your ability to win.
Right.
So it's just cosmetic. But if you buy that stuff, 20% of what you pay for goes towards the prize pool. And every year there's like a new record set for that. In last year, actually, Gabe Newell himself recorded a series of sound bites so that when you're playing the game and like you die, Gabe Newell's voice will be like, whoa, you screwed up there or something like that. So,
oh, I shouldn't have eaten the last one. I can't help it. I have to do it.
I'm surprised it took you this long.
Yeah, I got to get my barbs in.
So, okay. So that ends up being a big deal. And then Dota 2 itself, I have to say, as a game, it is a phenomenal game. Just as the construction of the game and the interface, I cannot believe how well designed it is. And in particular, it's built really to facilitate esports. And I think I touched on this when we did the Blizzard, my complaints about StarCraft 2, but just as one example, when they're doing a big tournament, you can launch Dota 2, the game, and you can click on the tournament games that are going on and have the tournament game load up on your, like in your game engine.
Right.
So that you're observing in real time, the actual tournament game. You're just like watching it in your game, and you can scroll all around the map and click on the guys or whatever.
There's a real like fucking symbiotic relationship between Dota and esports. I feel like they grew together, and like they both had enough foresight to understand that they needed one another to grow, and man, were they right.
And it was completely facilitated.
Yeah.
And as another example, there's an option when you're watching the games online, you can pick your announcer feed. So they have like the newbie announcer casters and then like Russian language and Spanish and English. And you can pick which announcer feed you want in game while you're doing all this. So it's incredible the harmonization that they made for that.
For sure.
And it contrasts so jarringly with StarCraft II, which was the other attempted esport game trying to be big at the time and just failed.
Just failed at every turn.
Miserably, because it didn't have any of that. Yeah. And they didn't really facilitate it as well as they should.
They didn't think to the level right. of chess, to foreshadow more auto chess. But that was where Valve was really fucking ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, so they got blown out of the water by Dota. So Dota kind of was the ongoing Valve project from basically 2011 until now. So 2011... You do get
also hats for TF2.
Portal 2. Well, and so there were two expansions for Portal 2, right? And then that's right. You and I played one. Mm-hmm. And then they have this hat thing. I'm just, in terms of revenue generators, this stuff is kind of coming out. So you mentioned the hats for Team Fortress. That's bringing money into Valve.
But like an embarrassing amount of money, though. Like it's like, wow. You fucking assholes will pay this much money for hats.
You're already billionaires just from Steam sales alone.
Yeah.
And now you're making all the hat money on top of that.
The hat money.
Be a real man.
It's so fucking like drug pusher.
Look, just play the Portal expansions just like we did, which I believe were free.
They were absolutely free. Yeah, and they came out on the home versions as well.
We had such a spectacular time.
We did the two-player Portal 2 expansion.
You play as a robot.
And it's substantial. It's like an 8-hour campaign or something like that. Yeah. And we just sat there and did the whole fucking thing. And we did it old school on a couch, split screen, and it was so much fun.
Teamwork, trying to plot it out. And then there was one of the items you get in Portal is like this gray matter that you can shoot portals through, and it looks a little like
a certain bodily fluid. And we are both learned men, but we're also both pretty blue when you need to be. So we had a bit of a hoot with that one.
A minimum of 10,000 jokes.
Yeah. a bare minimum.
About that.
Yes.
All right. So
the adjective cummy was born. Oh, I had to say it. I had to.
The FCC is going to come after us.
That's fine.
All right. So Dota 2, we talked about that. That was great. The crowdfunding thing, the cosmetics. Portal 2, that worked out pretty well. And then other than those two things and the hats... There's just really rumors about stuff. You kept hearing like, well, they're working on Half-Life 3. Yeah. Eventually it's going to come out. And then it didn't. And this is from
the infamous post of like the supposed writer of that scenario who just leaked what the game was going to be.
Right. So that was around 2015 or 16. And this is probably the beginning of the turn is that post actually from that guy. Because up until that point, 2011, Portal 2 was so damn good. That bought kind of years of like, well, they got something coming out and we can't say that.
Well, and Valve's already established themselves as like this company, kind of like a Square or even Nintendo's guilty of doing this, where like you love their game so much and they're of a certain quality where you just kind of like forget as a fan, a 5-year gap between like one game and another for something that you really, really love. Like you might bitch at it at the time, but it doesn't seem all that long.
Well, they'll tell you. It's done when it's done.
Yeah.
And people, as long as the games are done and they're always good, you'll get a lot of rope with that.
Sure.
But at some point, it doesn't matter anymore because...
Well, at some point, you become Duke Nukem Forever or Shenmue 3.
Exactly.
Or...
And in 12 years, I think actually the gap between Half-Life 2 and now is about what the gap was between... during the Duke Nukem Forever development.
Yeah.
The only difference being that Valve has never actually confirmed Half-Life 3. It's only been rumored, and Half-Life 2 Episode 2 ended on such a cliffhanger. It's obviously that's not the end of the series.
Exactly.
All right, but anyway, you couldn't say that they weren't doing anything during that time, though, the post-2011 time, because they did have Dota, and Dota was very popular in that community, but that was the preeminent community of PC gaming at the time.
Right.
So they bought themselves a lot of slack. But by 2016-ish, now it's been 5 years since Portal 2 came out, and people are like, guys.
Yeah, no shit. And I want to jump in here just to say, like, following the timing kind of matches up too. But if you take Valve as, like, this industry disruptive fucking, monolith mega company that they clearly are, like, look it over in other media. So you have Netflix. And Netflix disrupted the way we consume media with streaming, right?
Yeah.
But Netflix, pretty early on, not immediately, but pretty early on, knew that, well, eventually all the other companies that we do business with are going to get wind of this, and they're going to do their Disney Pluses and their whatnots.
Yeah.
So we should probably invest some money in content that we own, which is, to me, it's fucking insane because Valve started as the content creator and then said, whoa, hey, fuck that. We have so much money. Let's stop making the content that we own and people love to focus on being like this fucking platform or this vehicle to distribute content to other people.
Yeah, we're going to be Nintendo. We're going to make a Steam box and you're going to buy that. And there'll be a controller with it. And you can buy that.
Which too. That's all well and good, even though they were more or less like poorly executed on. But like, you know what you need on those things to be like Nintendo is the original content that you own and no one can take away from you. And they didn't do any of that.
I know. And like Nintendo, it's like, it feels like every quarter I get some major franchise from them with some major franchise character, the most recent being Luigi's Mansion,
right,
which is great.
And it'll be, exactly. They come out and they're always great. And you're just like, wow, I don't mind waiting for these because every time they come out, they're so good. And now they come out at such a clip. Where it's exactly what you said. Like every quarter, you get just a fucking banger from Nintendo.
Yeah, it's like, well, and then before that, it was Link's Awakening, which I haven't even been able to play because I did Luigi's Mansion.
Right. So, but that's how you do it. Like you have the platform, and just like Netflix, that's how you do it. Like Stranger Things is obviously fucking massively popular, and a bunch of other Netflix stuff that they own and will never not own.
Yeah.
Is massively popular.
And all credit to them for having the foresight to see where everything was going and then making that investment. So now Disney Plus is a thing and it's popular.
Yeah.
But I don't think Netflix is hurting for subscribers. Absolutely not. I know I did not trade one for the other. I don't think
it's possible. Like it costs so much. It's so little amount of money for what you get out of these things that's why they can get away. Obviously like people are now starting to bitch about like, well now I'm paying like I have like five streaming things. So I'm paying like basic cable prices, but that's like kind of unique thing. Most people, I think, only have like one or two.
I would say it probably maxes out at three. I would say Hulu, Disney, and Netflix are probably the big three. And then to a certain demographic, they might also have HBO.
Right. But Steam was all of these things rolled into one for so many years. And now the competition for them is now starting.
So you asked earlier, and I probably should have finished my answer, when and why would it have turned? I mentioned the flat development structure and the ego that goes along with it. Part of it, too, is the perfectionism.
Yeah.
When you've only released good stuff and you don't need the money, it's better to not release anything than taint the legacy by releasing Mass Effect 3 with the ending that it had. Yeah. So don't release Half-Life 3 if it's going to have the ending that Mass Effect 3 had. Right. Don't do it then. And I think that's kind of what they were getting to. They just couldn't get anything that was up to the standards of those first two games. And so they didn't release anything. And why should they have to? Because they've got all more money than God.
Yeah. Know.
So, all right. So, but everything's kind of going along. There is they're doing this hardware. It's not really working, but nobody really is really mad at them for that. And then the original writer of the first two Half-Life games who had a plan for how Half-Life 3 would have ended released what the ending of the game would be. And it's pretty funny because we did the BioWare podcast and I said that they didn't have a plan and it shows up obviously in Mass Effect 3.
Right.
This guy had a plan. I can't remember the writer's name, but he had a plan and released the narrative. And it was really weird how he did it because he had to kind of do it in a, he had to allude.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying this is the ending for Half-Life 3. But everybody saw it as this is what Half-Life 3 would have
been. Yeah, but the way he wrote it was like, well, had I had done it, it would have been.
It would have been something like that. Okay. And it sounded awesome.
Yeah.
And it sounded like it would have been everything that I wanted it to be. And there, in particular, there was like this ship that is kind of alluded to. I forgot it's called like the Aurora Borealis or something like that.
Yeah.
And then that was going to play a major role. And
I remember that being, when that thing leaked, that I remember that being the general consensus. It was like people were like kind of more bummed that it even came out at all because what they were reading was like, well, this is actually really good.
Well, and the fact that it had been released, it was like, oh, so you must not be working on Half-Life 3 because you just leaked the story intentionally.
Talk about deflating. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we're not going to get to see this after all. So that's kind of a letdown. So the hardware failures were like, eh. And then this was another one. It's not a bad game, but it's kind of a disappointing confirmation that you're not getting Half-Life 3.
Right.
Okay. Around 2000, maybe it was 17, might have been 18, Gabe Newell gives an interview and he says, hey, you know what? We're going to start making games again.
Yes.
And that year at the International, the big Dota 2 World Championship, they announced that there's going to be a new game. And everybody gets excited because they all think it's going to be Half-Life 3.
Right.
And then what the logo comes on the screen and it reads Artifact. the Dota card game. And so it's obvious, okay, it's like, oh, this Hearthstone. Is Dota Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And there is a chorus of boos, very loud boos that stream down. It's a really fun YouTube watch from the key arena where the Dota championships were taking place. So 20,000 people boo the announcement of this game.
That's way to go, guys.
After that, for 6 months after that, going into 2018, 18, they said nothing. And then in February of 2018, they finally showed off the game. And they showed it off in small glimpses, but it was like everybody, it was pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they announced also that they're partnering with Richard Garfield for it.
Right.
Richard Garfield invented Magic the Gathering.
He invented the CCG.
He invented the CCG. Yeah. That's right. So it was like, so this is like we talked about BioWare Star Wars MMO, right? This is Valve card game, Richard Garfield. And it's like, what else do you need to get hyped?
Yeah, totally.
Making a game. It's actually being made. They've announced it. He's working with them on it, and their track record and his track record are impeccable. So for months now after that happens, despite the boos at the initial game announcement, the game starts getting really, really hyped. This is from February of last year, 2018, to December 2018. And then they gave the game to a bunch of influencers. Yeah. I hate using that word, but influencers. And then those people were hyping the game as well. And there were a few kind of like yellow flags coming up, but it was really hyped. The game comes out in December, and it could not have landed with a bigger thud. Everybody played it on day one.
Mm-hmm.
Half as many people played it on day two. And then it basically went down half until there was almost nobody left.
It's like
and
a chemistry experiment.
By day 90. So the game comes out in December, and I believe there were 60,000 people playing it concurrently on day one. And by March, it was less than 100.
God.
So that's 90 days. And the biggest complaint, I put a fair amount of hours, probably 20 hours into it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that the gameplay is good. I think Richard Garfield did his job. The graphics are pretty good.
It has a very like sterile clinical look to it though, right?
Yeah. It's not, it doesn't have the Blizzard charm.
Yeah.
But nobody can do that. That's just like that's the Disney magic.
Yeah, cause I actually, all I know about Artifact is that it exists and who's behind it. I've never ever seen it. Cause again, if I'm playing a fucking card game, yeah. Jack, I'm using cards.
Yeah.
You're like real cards. Digital card games. Yeah. Like they've never done anything for
the
me.
The way God intended.
Thank
it.
You. Yeah.
The failure was the marketplace.
Yeah.
They wanted to be different than Hearthstone, and Hearthstone has engendered a lot of complaints about how greedy it is of Blizzard to not allow you to get cards in any way other than really buying packs. Mm-hmm. or playing the game. So you have to put a lot of money in every expansion. So Valve said, we're going to make a marketplace. It works so well for Steam.
Yeah.
And you can buy and sell cards on this marketplace. We'll take a small cut of 10%, but otherwise the market will dictate how much you can get a set for. And everybody hated that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was the barrier or why people stopped playing it. It could have been that it's a relatively complex card game because you're really playing three different games at once.
Yeah.
There's three boards and each board is its own mini game. And if you win two out of the three boards, you win the game.
See, that's a complaint that I've seen online numerous times is the complexity. Like it's a little much and people want a twitchier game.
What's funny is that, or sad is that, Richard Garfield and Valve kind of had a falling out after this as to who was responsible for the failure. And Richard Garfield says it was the marketplace and Valve says it was the game design. Game.
Yeah.
And I side with Garfield.
Yeah.
And I know that there are complaints about the complexity of the game and it takes a little bit, but that doesn't mean it's a bad game, but then
we just talked about how fucking popular Dota is and how right. goddamn hard it is to get into that game.
It's a really good comparison because everybody managed to get over that.
Hump. Yeah.
So why is it that they wouldn't get over this hump? I don't know. Well, maybe they wouldn't because you would then have to spend money. You don't have to spend money in Dota, but you do have to spend money here if you want to. You have to both get over the hump
right,
to play
right.
it and then spend money to acquire cards for it. So that's rough. So in March, Valve comes out and they make this what I'm sure would have been a difficult announcement for them to make, where they say, look, we thought this game was going to be good and it wasn't. And we've never had this happen before.
Yeah, they really haven't. So it's just like a new thing to try
and
on.
They said, so we're going to go back to the drawing board, see what we can do. We don't expect to have anything to say soon. We'll let you know. And everybody was like, all right. And then it's been 9 months and nothing has been said.
Yeah.
And everybody thought around the Dota Championships that they might say something then, because that's where they announced the game, and it, the game is set in the Dota universe. Mm-hmm. And then it was still nothing. So now in March, you know, we're in December recording this. In March, it'll be a year.
Right.
A year of nothing, you know? And so it's like, well, where do you go at that point? Is this game even still alive? I don't know. But it is, I mean, to say it was a thud after how much money did they pay Richard Garfield for his contributions?
Oh yeah. Come on.
And all the
he's the guy. Time? He had to have been fucking expensive.
The company might've gone from like $4.05 billion to like $4.03 billion.
No one survives that dip.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. So that's that. So then after that, they actually did something relatively smart around that time. They bought a little studio called Campo Santo.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the guys who made the Firewatch game.
Right.
And Firewatch is, you know,
it's one of the more popular walking simulators.
It's a walking simulator, yeah. But maybe the most popular walking simulator after Walking Dead, I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
And they bought that developer who was in the middle of making a game called something of the Nile, something Egyptian
themed. Well, in this game, the only thing I know about it is that because of Firewatch, like a lot of eyes were on this game because Firewatch was received so well.
Yeah, definitely. And and they were purchased by Valve in the middle of development, and then nothing has been
announced. Well, no, he came out, and the main guy behind Campo Santo basically said, like, it's a thing, it'll eventually come out, but I'm no longer working on it.
Oh, you're breaking news to me.
No, I'm pretty sure that's what's been said.
That had to be really recent.
It is, like within like the last like month.
Oh, man. Okay, so this is great, Brian. You're breaking news to me on this podcast. I didn't know what happened to that game.
It's on an indefinite hold.
And it allows me to continue to make the point I was going to make about the fall of Valve, which is that now that damn game, which was halfway into development, is also, it's like, who knows what the hell's going to happen with it, if the same guys are even behind it. What is Campo Santo doing over there? Like, I don't know.
They were doing, and I know we're going to get to it because it is like, I'm just as amazed over the whole thing as you are, but I thought that they hired Campo Santo, or bought them, acquired, however you want to say it, to work on Half-Life Alyx. And they basically said, whatever you're doing, you stop. And now you're working on Half-Life Alyx.
That was my understanding as well, just the way it read in the media. And that might still actually be the case.
Mm-hmm.
And given that Half-Life Alyx was recently delayed.
It's so fucking crazy. Like, all right, so you're a Valve fan. You get this announcement after, you know, all these missteps, which, you know, aren't as bad of missteps compared to some other companies out there, because they're still Valve and they're Steam and they're just making money hand over fist. But they announce their return to Half-Life, which is, you know, wow, fucking amazing. You guys are doing Half-Life. Then they change that wavelength a little bit by saying, well, it's a VR game. And then it's, it's still exciting, but, you know, VR really hasn't taken off quite the way that, you know, maybe a couple years ago people thought that it would in terms of like an install base. And then it's like a day later, maybe 2 days later after they made the announcement. Yeah. We're delayed.
You broke that news to me too when we were recording the other podcast, and it was amazing when you told me. I couldn't believe that they did that.
It's astonishing. What a
complete marketing failure.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Well, and they're doing all this at the time where they're now facing real competition. Steam as a marketplace is facing actual competition.
Yeah, so you have Epic Games out there, and we'll talk about them in a second. But like a good way, like we said with BioWare, a good way to get everybody focused on you again would be to announce Mass Effect 4.
Yeah.
So with Valve, a good thing to do is like, oh, hey, new Half-Life game, guys, pay attention to us. But you can't say, first of all, they announced an announcement.
Blizzard, by the way, did that right. Make a huge giant fuck up, and then give you
exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, the one piece of medicine that will fix the sickness.
10-minute long, epic, awesome, dark, bloody Diablo cinematic.
That's that is the only right move in Blizzard so far of the companies we've talked about in your trilogy of bitching and moaning.
Well,
the only
done, one boys. That, yeah. All is forgiven. They gave me Battlegrounds
they
too.
They fucked up the worst because like they went straight evil, just straight evil.
Well, and political evil.
Yeah, political evil. And then said, oh, sorry about that. Here's this thing that you want a lot.
Yeah, so Valve announces we're going to be talking about a Half-Life game. They don't say Half-Life Alyx, but a Half-Life game. The internet loses its shit. This is very similar actually to the Blizzard screw up when they said we're going to be making a Diablo announcement. And then they announced Half-Life Alyx, so it's not Half-Life 3. It's not a continuation of Half-Life 3, and it's on VR, everything that you said. So everybody's like, oh, that was it. We got all hyped up for it. It's not the thing that we thought we were getting hyped up for. And then they immediately delay it, which is the weirdest damn thing.
Yep.
They announce it and then delay it 48 hours.
Well, do you think they delayed it because of the tepid response?
I mean, it could be, I guess. But, I mean, I don't know. I actually can't speculate on that. It's just so bizarre.
See, to me, that's the only thing I'm seeing here is the fact that they thought that it would be a bigger deal when they announced it. And I mean, it was a big deal, but I think the bigger response was more like a aw. Like,
right.
And because of that, now they're saying, well, we'll delay it. So what's to say, and this is obvious, total rampant speculation here, but what's to say, like, maybe they made that announcement to just test the waters to see if just Half-Life would fucking generate some buzz. And then because everyone knows that they've been working on whatever weird VR thing that they've been working on.
Yeah.
And I know they have, for a long time. Well, they have some fucking like $1,000 controlling device that you can get to.
Oh, right? Yeah. I forgot.
I forget the name of it, but it's like this thing it costs a ton of money and it's like,
it's weird. Like Gabe and John Carmack were really into that too. Into the VR thing. Yeah. You know what it is? They were watching that Aerosmith video from the 90s.
That's exactly what it is. We're all so guilty of this.
Right. And Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
They want to be responsible for that.
Right.
And instead they're screwing up delivering us that. So
yeah.
Guys, if you want to make that, fine. I'm with you. But so far, you've been working on it for a long time,
and
we're not there.
Yeah, we're not even close
to being there.
Yeah, exactly. So. but that, I mean, who's to say that this was just all like a barometer test, and then now they'll go back and take whatever they're doing and actually turn it into like a viable, more broad-facing Half-Life product?
I mean, it could be. I just think that they're just not smart anymore. And, well, I should actually transition to talk about the auto chess thing.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of another example of this. So last December, auto chess comes out and it's a mod of Dota 2.
Right.
Which is hilarious because Dota 2 being a mod of Warcraft 3, we're now like going further down the rabbit hole.
Can you explain to a complete layman what auto chess is?
So here's the gimmick with auto chess and why it has in some ways a broader appeal than a MOBA game. What you do in auto chess is you pick a series of characters that you pay money for,
mm-hmm.
and you put them on the board and they automatically fight the enemy characters. And the strategy it comes in two different forms. One, certain characters align with other characters to get bonuses.
Okay.
So if you have like two knight characters on the board, they give each other a 10% protection bonus.
Okay.
So you're incentivized to try to find these arrangements where you're pairing similar characters together. Second, in between rounds, you get money and you can use that money to buy new characters. And if you buy three of the same character, it like levels up. Mm-hmm. So you can level up your character. So you're playing this game and you're going through these rounds and you're trying without dying to both level up your characters by finding the same type of character.
Setting up, searching for bonuses.
Yes. And then also finding characters of like-minded synergies. And so there's a randomization there that comes into effect as well. And people like it, and I like it, because it doesn't require any of the Twitch stuff that you have to be good at.
It's pure strategy.
It's pure strategy, like a game like Hearthstone,
right,
where you're timed in between rounds, but you're not just doing a reaction.
Right. It's clicking, not Twitch exactly.
Clicking. All right. So that is invented last December by some, I think it's like a Ukrainian outfit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it immediately takes the community by storm, the gaming world.
Yeah. It's like a runaway success, like instantly, right?
Definitely. And by January, Valve had flown those guys out to the Valve studios to do what they always do. Talk about, hey, should we buy you? Should you come work for us? What do you want to do? And when they left, there was no decision. And I'm speculating here, but this is informed speculation in the sense that I used to be in the industry myself. I think what happened is they came out there, they couldn't come to an agreement on a valuation of the company for Valve to buy them as a company. And
right.
They didn't want to quit the company to go be employees of Valve, especially because they're foreigners. It would have been hard
difficult,
to do that anyway.
Yeah.
So they probably thought, incorrectly as it would turn out, that they could just keep being very successful by monetizing their own auto chess game.
Mm-hmm.
Valve, to their credit, gave those guys their blessing and said, we're not going to buy you. You're not going to come work for us, but we're not going to try any legal shenanigans to prevent you from making and profiting off of this game.
Right.
So they do that. So in the meantime, a bunch of things happen. almost at once, starting in February of this year, 2019. A, Valve starts making a game called Underlords. B, the developer of League of Legends starts making a game called Teamfight Tactics. C, Blizzard starts making a variant of Hearthstone called Battlegrounds.
Yeah.
So Valve is first to the market in June with Underlords. And it comes out and it's fun, just the same way that Artifact was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty good for a while. About a month later, Teamfight Tactics comes out. And so this is by the League of Legends creator. Mm-hmm. And I have not played Teamfight Tactics, but as I understand it, and certainly in the marketplace, the battle is over. Teamfight Tactics wins.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody that was playing Underlords, for the most part, migrates over to Teamfight Tactics.
So what happened to the originators, the Ukrainian fellas?
They were there all along, but basically when Underlords hit, everybody moved from the original Auto Chess to Underlords.
Okay.
Then they went from Underlords to Teamfight Tactics. And then so then I would say Underlords lost probably 2/3 of its player base from that. And then in November, during the amazing BlizzCon, right after Blizzard did their 10-minute Diablo video, they announced Hearthstone Battlegrounds. And then that is so much fun. And yeah. I'm sorry that it's fun. I don't want it to be fun. I want to be mad at Blizzard.
It is what it is.
I'm sorry. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And whoever was left of Dota Underlords that did not leave for Teamfight Tactics definitely left, including me, for Battlegrounds. And almost all the Auto Chess guys did as well. So right now, I would say Teamfight Tactics is still a thing. Probably Battlegrounds is, I think, maybe the biggest of them. I might be wrong about that. But those two games are definitely still relevant, Teamfight Tactics and Battlegrounds.
Right.
Underlords is not relevant. And the original Auto Chess, sorry, Ukrainian guys, that's not relevant either. And when I say not relevant, I mean like a really small player. If we went on Twitch right now, Auto Chess is probably fewer than 50 viewers. And
holy shit.
Yeah, and Underlords, it might be.
Man, talk about a fucking flash in the pan.
Yeah, it's crazy because they invented the genre and then the world passed them by. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. But Valve was first to the market with a game that was actually pretty fun. And they updated the game a lot too. They tried to be responsive to the community requests. Right. It was really impressive for a while what they were attempting to do.
Learning from mistakes too.
Right. And the thing is, like, it's hard for me to ascribe purely malevolent, evil intentions from these guys because I see what they were trying to do with Underlords. I see kind of what they did in the way that they contributed to the monetization of the prize pool for the Dota tournaments. Portal 2 was great. That happened this decade. So it's not, they haven't completely bent to evil. I think that they've just been disincentivized from doing anything other than the things that make them money, which is like Steam. And remember, once upon a time, Google was a really innovative company too.
Yeah.
And then in the last 10 years, they've become basically not innovative at all because they've just poured all their resources into their search engine.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes them money. And so at one time, they created Gmail on a whim and it completely disrupted the email market. And then they've done
Google Glass did not.
Exactly. Right. And now they don't even try that stuff
anymore. Yeah. They don't care.
So, you know, Valve, it's kind of the same thing. So anyway, Underlords becomes not a thing. And so now if you're Gabe Inn, he comes out and, like I said, at the top of the segment in 2017, he's like, hey guys, we're going to start making games again. It's like, all right, bro. Well, so far you bought Campo Santo, which had a game half done and that's been delayed indefinitely.
Yeah.
You announced Half-Life Alyx, which has also been delayed indefinitely 2 days after you announced it. Dota Underlords is non-existent. Practically, an artifact you've all but abandoned. We haven't heard anything out about in 9 months. So, yeah.
So what about this is making new games?
Yeah, like I mean, I guess technically you're putting stuff out there,
right?
But it's not, you know.
What's crazy to me is like you look at the Steam, like the, you know, the PC digital marketplace and how that's expanding, and you have the Epic Games Store and all these other launchers, which we did a whole episode about. But you'd think that at the very least Valve would you know do more about that, like you know, sew up a bunch of exclusivity deals, buy some studios. Yeah. Like you can make games by proxy because you have that much fucking money, and you know, tie those up with contracts that keep stuff exclusive. And it doesn't seem like they've done that either.
They've got all this money that they could do that. And it's interesting because when Steam first became a thing, that was a disruptive force because they were getting between the developer and the publisher and the retailer. And
right.
They're going straight to the developer and saying, you don't need that publisher. You can release on us. Yeah, we'll take a 30% cut, but that's less than what you're going to pay everyone else.
Yeah, and all of these other fees that have traditionally existed in the marketplace are now all gone.
And now Epic Games is is doing the one better and saying, well, you know what? Valve's 30%, not a great deal. We're only going to charge you 10 or 12%. And by the way, if you want to use our engine, the Unreal Engine, the most popular engine you can use for video games,
yep.
we won't even charge you for it as long as you release your game exclusively on our platform. Oh, you need some money too?
Here's some of this. Yeah.
Well, if you make it exclusive for a year, and we'll even pay you to help fund your development.
Yeah, they're basically making aggressive Steam. That's all the Epic Game Store is to me. It's just Steam, yeah. but with like aggressive capitalist practices.
And we talked about this on the other podcast, so I don't want to be repetitive, but if you're in the marketplace, the consumers are a little frustrated because they're not able to get these games on Steam the way that they want. They have to download the Epic Games
app. How dare they?
There's clicking involved, website registration.
Using a burner email address, yeah, all these things.
Give me a break.
Yeah. No one has time.
Right. So again, frustration in the marketplace.
Right.
But for developers, what a boon, yeah. right? Now they're paying you to finish development of the game. You get to use an engine for free.
Yeah.
And they're taking a smaller cut of the sales at...
Every corner is a win here.
Every single one. So like, why wouldn't you release your game on the Epic Games store? Except for two reasons. One, it's still even now probably a tenth of the size of Steam. Yeah. And they still don't have a shopping cart.
They still don't have the fucking shopping cart?
So God,
that's so cool.
So God forbid you want to buy two games at once.
How dare you?
Two separate much like with our Taco Bell or Del Taco purchases today.
Oh man.
That two separate transactions.
That was an endeavor.
Two separate transactions. So anyway, all right. So that's about. So the disappointment here is that if you look back to 2011, Portal is awesome. There's still hope for Half-Life 3.
Or something Half-Life,
and you got Dota 2 that was new at the time, and you know that was great. Team Fortress 2 is still newish, and they had Left 4 Dead games were in their prime.
Yeah,
and so it was like, well, okay, this is going to be a thing. Then 8 years now, from 2011-12 until now, almost exactly the same timeline as BioWare.
Yep,
you had a series of hardware failures, which were just like mild disappointments because nobody expected much out of that to begin with. But then the Artifact disaster and the Underlords disaster and the Half-Life Alyx delay and the Campo Santo, what's going on with that, and still no Half-Life and
or Portal right. or Left 4 Dead.
And then for the first time, they're being challenged in the Steam space in a way that they haven't been before.
They're kind of getting caught with their pants down here.
Yeah, this is not like BioWare, where I think Valve isn't going to exist in a year, but they are not being the disruptive force that is what made them a 70% market shareholder of the digital games industry.
Yeah. And, you know, look at, I brought up the analogy of Netflix earlier, and Netflix did everything that they possibly could to future-proof their business. And it's so far worked out for them.
Really expensive, but working out for them. This is how you stay alive in a brutally competitive marketplace, which is what the content creating industry is right now.
Yeah.
Everybody is like trying to get the inside track, and it might end up being that way with digital platforms as well. You know, we've made this comparison before, but Steam versus good old games versus Origin versus especially the Epic Game Store, that could be the Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus of video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It already is. So like, you know, that I think that train's left the station.
I think so too. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, but it's a really bad time for Valve to be losing market share in the Steam space because they're not firing on all cylinders when it comes to their game creation market share either. Really good way to change that. Announce Half-Life 3. I want to see this upcoming E3, Half-Life 3 announced and then Mass Effect 4 announced right after it.
Talk about us being timing wizards.
Have to do an emergency podcast. Exactly. Brian, it's happening.
I'm on the wire. I see all the intel coming in. As we wrap this thing down, and I think you may have just answered it right there, but what do you see as something that Valve can do to right the ship? Me and we both know, like, you know, they're not the Titanic.
Yeah.
They're not sinking, but they're in a decline and they're slumping.
So they're going to have to change their business model a little bit. They've only released games as a service, which is what Artifact was and what Dota Underlords was, where they're just got constant updates and they want you to keep pouring money into the product. If they simply released a new Portal game, just make a new Portal game, make Portal 3, put that out there, charge $50 for it. People will buy it. No, there's not like there's competition in the first person puzzler genre.
Yeah.
Just put that out there just to show us that you can make a good game again. If you want to announce Half-Life 3 and have all of us wetting our pants for it, That's fine. That'll still probably happen, except now it's competing against itself because it's Half-Life Alyx that exists apparently. But I would like to see from them, rather than them trying and failing to compete in hyper competitive genres,
yeah,
like the auto chess genre and the CCG or TCG genre.
They have to go to the well.
Yeah, right? Just make a standalone game in one of the many universes that you have. Do Left 4 Dead. They've got plenty of franchises.
Well, and they're in a good spot with all that stuff too, because there has been so much time without like a high quality product with one of those names attached to it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know,
bought Campo Santo. Release that game.
Yeah.
Have those guys write games for there's plenty of talent there and there's plenty of money. Just put something out there that doesn't suck. How about that?
I think that is the only way that they're going to get back on top of this thing. Yeah. And with that,